Reading from chapter, I think it's 7, Nitya Dharma and material Nitya Dharma material existence. Omiganitam anandasya ananjana shalapaya nakshura militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha vichetanya mano bhishtam rafitam yena bhutale sayam rupa pradamayam sadati sapadantikam pancha kata tirudhyascha Ripasindhu bhaye vacha patita nam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo nama Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudeva Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, So as I mentioned before, somehow in the iPad, half of the chapter is missing. So the context of the story is not full. So we'll just basically deal with the philosophy today and the dialogue. And hopefully next week I'll have enough time to put in the context of the story. We know the general story is the people coming to Krishna consciousness at the time of generation after Lord Chaitanya. And according to who they are and according to the questions they raise, different tattvas or subjects of Krishna consciousness are discussed systematically in this book. And basically, in the context of this novel or story, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is able to cover systematically the whole subject of Krishna consciousness. Now, somehow there's a dialogue here. Between a Yadava Das, and we'll put it in context to next week, and Ananta Das, I suppose, is the Babaji and the Guru. And it comes to a question of Nitya Dharma and material existence. Material existence means functioning in the world to satisfy your senses and your physical nature as a married person. And there's so many obligations that a married person has, and in a society like a comprehensive spiritual society, like a comprehensive spiritual society, like is the setting of this story. There are different Brahmins who may not be Vaishnavas, but maintain so many of the ritualistic function. So the question is, how does someone who's into Krishna consciousness deal with that? They're obliged, but they don't engage in ritualistic activities that are simply meant to satisfy their material ambitions. But they perform ritualist activities that maintain the various functions of life. And then the understanding is, because material life, that it's not meant for the satisfaction of the senses, but we satisfy our senses, which to the, just to what we need, our necessities, which may vary from people to people. Everyone has those necessities. So renunciation means to really reduce them as far as possible, and to be as free as possible from dependency on them is certainly conducive to bhakti. And therefore one enters into his material responsibilities with a spiritual inception. Marriage, not just to produce children, of course, to produce or worship forefathers, but that, you know, but to assist one another in Krishna's service, and looking as the partner, as the servant of Krishna, and accepting it for that reason, for the service of Krishna. So all these things are explained. And then Ananta Das makes the point that, and you know, that most of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates were indeed grihasthas, and the Bhagavatam, many saintly kings and sages from Dhruva and Prahlad. So it's actually a very, very respected thing. So now the question comes is, when do you renounce it? And it's not necessary to renounce. Well, bhakti is about dedication. Renunciation alone does not make you advance. But as a facility to advance in spiritual life, one with the antarmukha, the inward tendency, where the consciousness reverts from gross matter to the mind and there to the soul. A person with that tendency, that's contacting objects, looking at them as Krishnas and inspiring devotion in their heart, rather than looking at objects as one's own and inspiring the identity of the self and mind to go external towards those objects. One whose focus is inward he could be eligible for that. But the qualification is high. And Ananta Das explains, you should be free from the desire to associate with the opposite sex, with gross or subtle material enjoyment. You should have unrestricted mercy towards all living entities. You should be completely indifferent towards endeavors to accumulate wealth. You should strive only in times of need to acquire food and clothing suitable for maintaining oneself. Renounce. And he should have unconditional love for Krishna. He should shun the association of materialists. He shouldn't have that desire to perform great undertakings. I should be free from attachment and aversion in life and death. And then Ananta Das, naturally, when he gives the philosophical concept, he'll establish his authority by quoting so many verses. And it's very, very high. Those who worship no one but me, and who therefore engage in firm and exclusive devotion into me, give up everything for my sake, including all duties prescribed in Varnashram and all relationships with their wives, children. But very advanced, Kapiladeva is describing like this renowned sadhu. And when these symptoms are manifest in a grihastha, he's no longer obligated to karma, and therefore he can renounce these activities. And such people are indeed very rare, and to get their association, Ananta Das explains, is very, very fortunate. The Yadava Das, he's the person who's inquiring. He sees that young people often renounce household life, and then they establish some kind of worship, and then inevitably they fall into association of women, and they give up their chanting, and they maintain their place by collecting alms. You want to know, are these people grihasthas? And Ananta Das says, first of all, the eligibility to renounce has nothing to do with youth, whether they're eager or old age. It depends on your samskaras. So the only qualification is really whether you have those samskaras, that nature to renounce. Okay, now we'll just read and we'll comment. Yadava Das, what is real renunciation? What is false renunciation? Ananta Das, real renunciation is so firm that it can never be broken at any time. False renunciation arises from deception, dishonesty, and the desire for prestige. So there's something very, very deep that's real renunciation. You don't have the desires within you for the external objects of gratification. It's a very deep thing. And when you achieve that kind of stage, then you're nishtha, you're very fixed. But there are other people who take renunciation because it's prestigious. It's another way to gain power, to gain resources, to control the world. So that's false renunciation. The people who exhibit renunciation for respect, Ananta Das says, is so inauspicious. Because when the respect is there, then when the respect is not there, the renunciation goes, because you're just doing it to be respected. You're taking your renunciation because people in that society value renunciation as the top achievement within society. I told a story before, the story of the desert monks, that the Christians, they would have these big monasteries with thousands of monks, and then these people would call the desert monks. They would go out to the Sinai Desert, various places, and just live the most utterly renounced life. And then what would happen is someone would get a lot of prestige in that monastery. Oh, look, he eats so little. Oh, he sleeps so little. Oh, he's so sober. Oh. And then the person goes out into the desert and then completely falls down to his desires, because the renunciation was fed. This is a book, a Christian monk called John Climacus. I don't know what it is. He said, by the manure of false prestige. So whether your renunciation is because legitimately you have no desire, or it's a facility to help you get your desires. Yadavadas asks another question. Does a bhakta who has given up household life need to adopt... One second. My iPad is going to run out. I got to plug it in. One second. Give me a minute. One second. So then Yadavadas asks another question. Does a bhakta who has given up household life need to adopt the external dress of renunciate? Nantadas, Nirapecha, Akinchana bhaktas, renounced devotees, who have firmly renounced the spirit of enjoyment, purify the entire world, whether they live in the forest or remain at home. Some of them accept the loincloth and worn or torn clothes as external signs to identify them as members of the renounced order. So there's a uniform. Uniforms to two purposes. They don't have to be superficial. But uniform allows you to be identified. And a uniform gives you a mood. So the dress of renunciate, you can be identified as a monk, as a sadhu, as a spiritual person, which is helpful to social organization, obviously. At the time of accepting this attire, they strengthen their resolve by taking a firm vow in the presence of other Vaishnavas or in the renounced order. So it's an external manifestation of the commitment you made. And as long as you wear the dress of a renunciate, you're socially bound to follow the duties of a mendicant and the responsibilities for detachment. The so-called entrance into the renounced order or the acceptance, this is called entrance into the renounced order or the acceptance of appropriate garments for renunciation. Dress also means the traditional color of it, like the sannyasis, which is this geru or this rock dye color. It's kind of muddish. It meant material dress is finished. Dress is one of the ways in which people try to, well, there's one sense of dress that it gives you a certain healthy self-esteem, may satisfy certain needs you have, especially a woman, to look beautiful. So you said if you refer to this as the acceptance of the dress renunciation, just called Bheka Grihana or Vesha Grihana, what is the harm? And Yadavadas says, well, what is the purpose of being identified by the signs of the renounced order? Obviously, the thing is not important. The dress is not the ultimate thing that's important. But the ultimate thing that's important, the ultimate thing that's important is one's renunciation. So, dress is not the essential thing, but it has some purpose. The dress renunciate, you're no longer trying to look beautiful, to control the world to your own desires. You're identified as one who's doing that, and it creates a certain psychological disposition. He says, what is the purpose? Yadava says, to be identified with the signs of renunciate and not the dust. It is very helpful to be identified as a member of the renounced order. A renunciate's family will no longer maintain a relationship with him and easily give him up. So commitment is so important, and signs of commitment are so important. Commitment rises you above the mental plane, the platform where you're calculating things in terms of your own selfish desires. And a cultured person does not live his life from the mental plane, from that perspective of making decisions based on power and enjoyment. So, it announces something, that these are the rules that I follow. So that announces it to his family, it announces it to the opposite sex. So it's it facilitates a life, the dress facilitates a life of renunciation, but the dress itself does not make you renounce. It's something a renounced person uses to remember his responsibilities and for other people to appropriately respond. Excuse me, one second. I should mention that today I went out in the Harinam, and it was a very wonderful experience, one of the best kirtans I've ever had, you know, kirtan Madhava and Ananta Govinda, Amala Purana, and some other Vrindavan 24-hour Mahendra associate. I forgot his name. It was amazing. I'm sitting there and my niece comes up. My niece works. That's the subway that she uses to get back home every day is Union Square. So every day she passes the Hari Nam and looks for me. Somehow, I don't know why she hasn't seen me yet. But my niece saw me and she came over. I mean, she has a very good job. She's very, you know, has to be well-dressed, beautiful. So she came up and I'm sitting there. She said, Uncle Benny. That was my name before. So I just, I told her, so nice to see you, but don't hug me here. You have certain responsibilities when you're in various orders of life. But here it says, a renunciate family members will no longer maintain a relationship with him and will easily give him up. Prabhupada said, in terms of our renunciates, we're really not like the sannyasis of days of yore, but you know, have some limitations on social intercourse. It's hard to be a sannyasi in relationship to your family when your family doesn't follow the same rules that you do. And you have to be very careful to uphold your social responsibilities, at the same time, not unnecessarily turn people away from Krishna consciousness. So I try to do a good job. He will no longer desire to enter his house, and a natural detachment will awaken in him with a consequent fear of materialistic society. It is beneficial to some bhaktis to accept the outward signs of renunciation, though this may not be necessary if detachment from household life is fully matured. So it's a facility for renunciation, but what here it's saying is that someone may already be renounced, and he really may not require this. Interesting concept. It's not absolutely necessary. Although Prabhupada did institute a type of vanashram dharma, and I know most of Prabhupada's disciples, they're thinking that one day they will probably have to take sannyas, or they should, or they, you know. So it's a facility to spiritual life, but it's not an absolute necessity. Just like a policeman, he could be in plain clothes. There's a reason why he has a uniform. It's not an absolute necessity. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam 4:29-46, sa jahati mitim loke vedicha paninishtitam. A bhakta who has received the mercy of Bhagavan gives up attachment for all worldly activities and for all ritualistic duties prescribed in the Vedas. So we have duties that are prescribed according to our condition. So if your internal condition changes, it necessitates that one looks. Your duties are prescribed according to your internal condition, like a medicine. If your internal condition changes, you're not necessarily obligated to those same duties anymore. You may have different duties or be transcendental to duties. There is no injunction for such bhaktas to accept the outward dress renunciation. It is necessary only as long as there is some dependence on public consideration. basically saying in this age, sannyasa is a social, it's done for social purposes, either to protect one from certain social interactions that are not healthy, or Yadavadas, from whom should one accept the renounced order? One should accept the renounced order from a Vaishnava who is situated in the renounced order. The Hasta Bhaktas have no experience of the behavior of renounced Bhaktas, so they should not imitate anyone in the renounced order. Anyway, that's just a technical thing that's not so relevant to most of us, but obviously, if even if you're initiated by someone, he's a grihastha, he doesn't give you sannyas. The Brahma Vivarta Purana confirms this. Aparikshyo padishtam yat loka nasaya tadpade. One brings renation to the world if he instructs others in religious principles that he himself does not follow. So this is the key to teaching. The key to teaching is the potency you have in your words is the degree that you already adhere to them. Therefore, Krishna himself felt limited when he appeared on this planet, limited in preaching pure devotional service because he was not a devotee. He was the object of devotee's love. Whoa. Ooh. One second. My iPad ran out. I don't know what I did wrong, but I think I got the book. I do. One second. We'll just go a few more minutes. Thank you. Verse from Brahmavivarta Purana, you instruct a person in principles that you yourself do not follow. And such an important thing. What criteria should a guru use to offer initiation into the renounced order? The guru must first consider whether or not the disciple is qualified. Because one who initiate someone is taking responsibility for that person. The disciple takes responsibility for the vows, but the guru also takes responsibility for the vows because he's not supposed to initiate someone unless they're qualified. And therefore it says that the guru takes the karma of the disciple because he has some responsibility in the matter. He's approved this person to Krishna, that this person is serious. I have tested him. you can come into your service. You should see if the Grihastha Bhakta, on the strength of Krishna Bhakti, has acquired a full temperament characterized by qualities such as full control of the mind or senses. Has the hankering for wealth and the satisfaction of the tongue been uprooted or not? So he has to see. And again, it's not the qualification for bhakti, but it's the qualification for sannyas, which should be a product of one's bhakti or devotion. Because the strongest renunciation is based on giving up things that are not favorable to one's goal. And Prabhupada even gave the example of, I think it was Stalin was so dedicated to communism. I heard Prabhupada say this on a tape. He was so dedicated to communism, that was his objective, that he had to get an operation and he could have taken out his anesthesia, but that would put him at greater risk. And he took it without. The guru should keep the disciple with him for some time in order to examine him thoroughly. He may initiate him into the renounced order when he finds that he's a suitable candidate. If the guru offers initiation to a person who is unqualified, he will certainly fall down himself. So responsibilities are very, very much promoted. Even a disciple. It says the disciple goes to hell if he takes an unqualified guru. But everyone is responsible. The disciple is responsible for his decision. The guru is responsible for his decision. It's a society where people are held to their responsibilities for their own benefit. Now I see this, that it's no light matter to accept the renounced order. It is a serious undertaking. Unqualified gurus are turning this practice into a common affair. It has only just begun. But there's no telling where it ends, because this is what happened at the time of Lord Chaitanya. The gurus would give this Babaji Vesh, it's this loincloth, very simple, and we mark one as a renunciate. But if one was doing that with a motive to be respected, then the renunciation is used for non-renunciation. The symptoms of renunciation are used for power, so that one can seduce women, so that one can accrue money. And if one has given this dress to someone who's so unqualified that they misuse it, then the guru becomes responsible. And this is a social commentary. What was happening after the time of Lord Chaitanya? By the time Bhaktivinoda Thakur began to preach, the whole movement of Lord Chaitanya has been disreputed. Anantadat, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu severely punished Chodaharidas for a completely insignificant fault just to protect the sanctity of renounced order. The followers of our Lord should always remember the punishment of Chodaharidas. So he did something innocent. It was an old lady. He begged rice. And somehow there was a minor discrepancy. I forgot the exact. But Lord Chaitanya was very heavy with him, because he realized what ruin would come to society if the people were using the order and dress of renunciation, which is so highly respected in India, even to this day, if it was appropriated by the false ego to use as a tool to increase their material life, the society becomes devastated. And this was introduced by Indra, when out of envy for Prithu, he wanted to stop his Ashwamedha sacrifice, his horse sacrifice, and doing 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices. And Indra, who, although he's the king of heaven, he has strong material desires, which means you want to control the world, and you become afraid of competitors. That's envy. And therefore, Indra somehow or other wanted to stop this sacrifice, and he came dressed in the garb of a sannyasi. He took the dress of religion with the motive of power. And through that act, it says, was the manifestation of all bogus religion. Bogus religions, or religions that will falter, are religions that use religion for material needs. That's why the new pope is being respected. He's being respected because he's could have lived in the palatial palace, and he lives in a simple whatever. He kept his renunciation, even though he became the pope. Just like the king of Rome. It's a very, and people respect it. People so respect people who are not selfish and are renounced on the platform of not being selfish. They're renounced because they don't have too many desires for themselves. This is so respected in society. And to mar the order by using the order for one's own enjoyment is so condemned. This is introduced by Indra, and this is the essence of bogus religion. When religion or the accoutrements or clothes or symbols of religion are used to accrue power. Then people lose respect in the order that is supposed to be respected for the dissemination of knowledge. And society becomes faithless, and then people can't take the spiritual life. So here, even in this novel, these questions are being brought up. And he's explaining how strict Lord Chaitanya begged some chip rice or something. Is it proper to construct a monastery and establish the worship of the deity after one has announced or renounced? No. One of the principles of devotional service is not publishing too many books, not building too many temples, not getting too many followers. Meaning that anything can be done for the wrong reason. And the tendency will build a temple so it can be identified with my achievements so I can get power, or print many books to impress people, or build luxurious temples, or get many, many followers in the name of spreading Krishna consciousness, but actually to fulfill your own desires. So this is condemned. So is it proper to do this? No. Of course, we may do it in the spirit of pure devotion, but we should be cognizant of the temptation that taking disciples and publishing books and building big temples could easily be appropriated by the false ego to become more powerful so that one can enjoy more. The qualified disciple who's entered the renounced order should maintain his existence by begging every day. He should not involve himself in constructing monastery or other grand enterprises. He can live anywhere, either in the secluded hut or in the temple of a household. He should remain aloof from all affairs that require money, and he should constantly chant Sri Nam without offense. So this is the ideal, and although we can't live that way as ISKCON sannyasis, because for preaching, we require so many facilities, but we should be very vigilant not to take more than we need. In the name of preaching, in the name of balanced attachment. Roy John Prabhu said that if one has some desire for independence and some license for enjoyment because of the tendency of the senses to contact the sense objects in that way, then one takes a wife. And he becomes purified by the austerity of sacrifice for family. But if a sannyasi takes great material facility, well, she may do that for preaching, but doesn't in his personal living lifestyle, then what's the means of purification? Because you need tapasya to become detached from the body. What tapasya does is it puts a natural discomfort on the body in a spiritual pursuit that allows one to extract oneself from the senses. Just like when you indulge in the senses, you become further and further engrossed in the bodily concept of life. So that's the way tapasya works. When there's difficulty in the senses, you tend to extract the body from the senses. That's pratyahara. That's the fifth stage of yoga. Extracting the body from the senses. What do you call renunciates who set up a monastery and then live like householders? Nantadas. They may be called vantasi, those who eat their own vomit. And on that pleasant note, we'll stop. Are there any questions? Anybody say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Brother Radhe.
Rajaradhe, Hare Bol. Good. I need some good ears to give class. And today's sometimes a tough one. Good. Anybody else say hello? Anybody else? Okay, we'll enter now, bunch.